it's interesting how a lot of the similarities in the studies, as you are going to see. This is a study that we are doing in the Delta, looking at the acceptability of the self-collected sampling for HPV testing. And why are we doing in the Delta? This, I just include this graphic to show that African Americans in Mississippi still have one of the highest mortality of cervical cancer in the country than any other population. I'm going to skip this. We know everybody documented that. And I think that this shows the, you know, with the visual inspection, I think for the women who come in, it's a great method. But we need to be concerned about the ones who are not coming in. And the HPV DNA testing now has been approved by FDA. And some studies have suggested HPV testing may be more effective than pap smear in early detection of cervical cancer, here, given this problem of sensitivity and reliability. The problem with most of the previous studies is that they have done the HPV self-testing in the clinics, but with very encouraging results. Also, the women were recruited at the clinics, perhaps a more compliant group in terms of cervical cancer screening, and there are very limited findings on factors associated with acceptability. Most of the studies, as you're going to see here, have been done by basic scientists and not the involvement of a behavioral scientist that can look at the factors associated with acceptability, and they have not been theory-based. So this study, we are looking at the acceptability of self-collected sample for HPV testing as well as preference between pap smear and self-collected sampling among African-American women 30 years of age and older. HPV testing is now more recommended for women 30 and older because of if you do it younger than 30, you're going to get so many false positives or infections that will clear. We are more concerned about the persistent virus. I'm not going to talk too much about the theoretical models. We use the PEN-3. We use the health belief model. And the goal is what I will share with you today is the qualitative data that guide the development of a theory-based and a culturally relevant questionnaire that we are now testing, that we do not have the results yet. Also, before I move to the method, I need to give you a little bit of background. I'll be talking about that more tomorrow. This came about, this is an NCI intramural study where they are doing this in Mississippi without the involvement initially of a behavioral scientist, is to improve the technology of HPV testing. Because right now they use the hybrid capture 2. Probably that's the one you used, and there are a lot of sensitivity and specificity issues with the hybrid capture too. I'm getting more technical. So they're developing a new technology with AmpliCore using the same device. So what they are doing as part of their study is that they are getting a sample in the clinic of the screened women and a sample in the community of unscreened women who haven't screened for 3 years, and we are working with our community health advisors. We have a large project in Mississippi, is the Deep South Network for Cancer Control, where we train community health advisors. So they're having pap smear, they're having clinician-collected sampling without speculum, and the women then take the device home and return the sample, and they are looking at sensitivity and specificity, you know, for more basic clinical science perspective. So I got involved as a behavioral scientist because it was an opportunity not to look at acceptability and adoption of this technology as it's being developed. So acceptability being defined as do women agree to take the device home, and adoption looking at what percentage will return the sample, and we're using more all the behavior change models so we can develop tailor interventions. So this is the focus groups. We did focus group with African American attending, and we're working with the public health system attending the clinics for their PAP, and women recruited in the community who had not had a PAP in the past 3 years. This is the sample. as you can see, was very similar of the women. Marital status was slightly different, and of course health insurance coverage. And health insurance coverage here includes, very broadly defined, includes Medicaid, Medicare. And about 40% only have heard about HPV. The results, there's a lot of data here. We follow the qualitative methodology. I'm a qualitative researcher. A lot of them report that the perceived susceptibility due to lack of knowledge, lack of financial resources to cervical cancer, not engaging in the screening for fear of results. That has been a common finding for us, not only in this population, but also in the Latino population. And also the fatalism was very important when discussing perceived susceptibility. It's like, I may be, but you know, God is God's will. God will know what to do. Most women acknowledge the severity of cervical cancer, but were not aware of the link between HPV and cervical cancer. What we did, first we had a discussion about HPV, and about what they knew, what they didn't know about cervical cancer and HPV, and then in the middle of the group we did a presentation to educate them so we could ask appropriate questions. Barriers, you can see, is they all acknowledge the benefits, and the barriers are the usual, lack of health insurance, financial resources, transportation. I don't know if you're familiar with the Delta. Sometimes you need to drive 2 or 3 hours to go to a clinic. It's a very impoverished area. Embarrassment, discomfort, procrastination, fear of results. Most women were very receptive to the self-collect sampling for HPV at home. And they were very divided with regard to preference. The ones preferring pap smear state that they would rather have a doctor nursing doing it, and they would not feel comfortable doing them themselves for fear of not doing it right or hurting themselves. And the ones preferring the self-collect sample indicated privacy and the fact that they didn't need to wait at the clinic as the main reasons. And overall, what they indicated is that giving detailed instructions and demonstration at the clinic, they will be willing to try it. Some concerns, including confidentiality, this sampling getting lost in the mail, cost, getting results mixed up with another patient, and fear of hurting themselves. We did not find differences, interestingly, in the qualitative data between women attending the clinic and the women recruited in the community. Because this may do that, we had about 20% of the women recruiting the community, when, although they were not supposed to have had pap smear for the past 3 years, about 20% reporting have had a pap smear in the past 3 years. So when you do community work and you involve community health workers and they show up for the focus group, you better keep them. So we did, but that was only 20%, and maybe this will sort out now in the quantitative data. And the women were very divided with regard to preference for pap smear and self-collected sampling. That's it. Thank you.
Thanks to all of our speakers. We do have some time for questions and answers. I know we presented sort of a wide continuum of the public health educational side as well as the clinical side, but across the board I think we did address one similarity, and that was the disparities and the opportunities to really address this issue. Any questions? Could you stand up just so I could hear? We could hear you a little better. Thank you.
So the visual inspection would be an alternative to the pap smear, so you would not do a pap smear if you were just screening with visual inspection. You do the visual inspection instead. If you have a positive visual inspection, you can do immediate treatment with either colposcopy and biopsy or colposcopy and LEAP treatments, or you could do immediate cryotherapy. So what's been done in some of the larger trials in Thailand and South Africa is combining visual inspection with immediate cryotherapy, which involves freezing the abnormal area of the cervix with liquid nitrogen. And then what happens is a portion, probably about a half a centimeter, the top half a centimeter of the cervix then sloughs off. So you essentially destroy the top 20%, 10 or 20% of the cervix, and it has an 85 to 90% cure rate for high-grade precancerous lesions. Right, so that a limitation of visual inspection is that it's limited to what you can see. So most lesions are present on, are able to be seen, but if you have a lesion that either covers more than 75% of the cervix or you can see it extending up into the cervical canal, that person would not be a candidate for the freezing, for the cryotherapy. They would need to be referred for an excisional procedure. But that is a limitation of visual inspection, that you can't see something that's up the canal, and it's less accurate in postmenopausal women for that reason.
Okay, so it's a plastic sheath with a Dacron tip, which is super absorbent. And so the women insert it, send it around their cervix several times, and it collects cells. And then that's put into a liquid fixative. We're using SurePath. And that is sent off. And we're doing both HPV testing, which is actually shown to have better sensitivity than a physician performed PAP, and that is because the cell, there's greater number of cells with that the absorbent tip, and it shows greater luminometry in the hybrid capture to the diagene tester. The cytology is pretty much equivalent. There were smaller studies. I don't have an actual sensitivity and specificity for you, but they're fairly equivalent. There is some theoretical question about getting enough endocervical cells. But otherwise, it's fairly equivalent.
Sort of looks like a big tampon that then self-retracts into the solution to suspend it. So it's
more like a for yeast infection medicine.
Right, like it's a little larger. The tip, yeah, it's a lot larger. About, would you say about 6 to 8 inches?
Mm-hmm.
But it's no bigger around than like a regular size tampon.
No,
the device is very good.
You twist the bottom. The only FDA-approved test right now here in the United States to detect HPV is the hybrid capture 2 test, which it has a high-risk probe and a low-risk probe. And the only recommendation right now is really more towards this high-risk probe to identify the presence or absence of one or more out of 13 cancer-causing or high-risk types of HPV. And so it doesn't give necessarily the data that are most useful in a self-sampling framework. And so the other issue is, of course, there is PCR testing and with microarray and such where you can determine, but that's not approved for clinical use here in the United States. It's only approved for research use right now. So that's why there's a race with different amplicore and other techniques to try to come up with a more reliable way to look at options like self-sampling here in the United States, as well as other options in even the developing world, in addition to visual inspection.
I have a question. To follow up on this, because our biggest criticism to us is that then, you know, if you do self-sampling and work at home, then you and I are not going to go to the doctor anymore. And that there's an opportunity for you to, you know, check for hypertension, diabetes, and so that is. So in our case, because they're part of the study, they need to come to the clinic anyway, so we have a good follow-up rate. What is your follow-up rate for abnormalities if they're not coming to the clinic to begin with?
I don't have a number on follow-up rate, but what we're doing is the community health worker goes back to the woman and tells her her results, and then we have a clinical navigator who helps the woman get into the health system. And once they know the results and that there's, you know, there's education component with the community health worker goes to the home and spends a little over an hour with the woman. First, you know, there's a very extensive survey. She uses the self-sample, and there's questions after using the self-sample. And then there's a little bit of education about HPV and cervical cancer. And so once the woman gets the results and she knows that there's something that can be done about it, she gets hooked up with a clinical navigator who takes her into the clinic system. I don't have actual numbers on how many have been through that next step.
Because we're not far enough along yet.
And that's one of the reasons why self-sampling offers a potential opportunity is these women are very poor, and they're often geographically isolated, and Isabel mentioned a 2 to 3 hour drive just to even get to a clinic or a community health center of some type. So that's why, which is equivalent to certain areas of the developing world where we know 83% of all cases of cervical cancer occur. So it's, you know, it's a very similar situation to try to look at. Any other questions?
Yes. For the in the cost for the test, what did you include in that?
For the visual inspection?
Yes.
It was the cost of the disposable supplies, so the vinegar and the cotton swabs, and the cost of a Ministry of Health nurse's time for 15 minutes, which is the time it takes to perform the exam. I didn't include the sort of health center cost of a speculum and the need to sterilize the speculum, as well as sort of a flashlight on electricity, that kind of thing.
Go ahead.
Well, you mentioned several other studies that were looking at visual inspection.
No. Is there
someone,
not that I know of.
There's someone at the NCI who was looking at that. Can you think of
As far as I know, there aren't. I'm not sure that visual inspection would be as cost-effective in the United States as other places because the it's a labor-intensive test, and in the developing world, you tend to have lots of labor and not a lot of supplies. And so to have a nurse practitioner, it takes, you know, 30 seconds of your pap smear to spend about 15 minutes doing this test, and then with a higher false positive rate, the woman would be referred for colposcopy with biopsy with a physician. It probably wouldn't be nearly as cost-effective. So I think that's why there's more looking into HPV. And that's a problem in developing countries as well, because they say, well, right now we're providing first world medicine, albeit to a very small number of women, and we don't want to move backwards, or what's perceived as moving backwards, even though it's been shown to be equivalent to pap smears.
We'll take one more question, and then I think some of the speakers are able to maybe stay around afterwards to answer individual questions. Any more questions? Yeah, I don't think so. I think a lot of the anecdotal discussion about it amongst providers, but again, unpublished, has been related to the concern that Isabel raised about some of the criticism about this is going to keep women from having a relationship with a provider. So I think that's been some of the discussion, but that's a good study. Somebody should do it. All right, thank you all very much.